John Keegan was a British military historian who grew up during war but never fought in one and considered himself more or less a pacifist. He became perhaps the preeminent military historian of his generation and was best known for his books The Face of Battle and A History of Warfare. In England, he became the military affairs editor for the newspaper The Telegraph. Keegan died last week at the age of 78. We're going to listen back to an excerpt of the interview we recorded in 1998. Keegan had tuberculosis as a child, which left him sick from the ages of 13 to 22 and unable to walk without a cane. You were born in London in 1934, and you grew up during World War II. What was your first exposure to the war?
I very well remember my younger sister, who's a year younger than I am, bursting into terrified tears when a barrage balloon appeared on the horizon. Barrage balloons were balloons that was tethered to the ground by a cable, which was supposed to cut the wing of a German bomber if it flew into it by mistake. And, of course, there were hundreds and hundreds of barrage balloons all over Britain during the war, around the big cities. This, though, I happen to know, was in 1938. It was practice. It must have been about the time of the Munich crisis. I also remember being evacuated for the Munich crisis. That's to say, taken out of London and sent down to the country because, as millions of British children were, because it was feared that the Munich crisis might become a war which would lead to the bombing of London. It did happen in 1939, in the following year. And I remember that too.
So your sister was terrified. What was your reaction?
I couldn't understand what on earth all the fuss was, but then I was just old enough to know what a barrage balloon was, and she wasn't. Curiously, like so many European school children European children outside areas of conflict, I had a very, very happy time during the war and went to live in the country. Found the little bits of war that I saw terribly exciting.
You were sent away to the countryside after World War II actually started?
Yes. Like millions and millions of English children. The cities were emptied of children and they were sent down to the countryside to be safe from the bombing. I think something like 4 to 5 million English children went to the country. And they all went in about a week at the beginning of September 1939. It was an extraordinary population movement.
And you took a train?
They were packed into trains with their school teachers and sent off to villages and small towns where people had been told that they were to accept so many children. The larger the house you had, the more children you had to accept. It was a very, very extraordinary bit of social engineering.
And where did you stay?
Curiously, my father was one of the officials in charge of all this movement. So we went down with him to the West Country, to Somerset, near Bath. Most Americans know where Bath is. We spent 5 happy years in the country, far from the fighting.
But I think you did witness the massing of American troops in preparation for the Normandy invasion.
Absolutely. One of my strongest memories is of the GIs coming. Somerset is a very rural little county. And I think there were probably more Americans than English people in Somerset in the months before D-Day. Americans became very, very popular, particularly with young people, because they were so light-hearted and outgoing in a way that the English weren't, and because they were very, very generous. We had had 4 years of war and living on very skimpy rations indeed, and the Americans, you didn't meet an American who didn't give you some chewing gum or offer you candy or something like that. All English school children of the war years remember those things about the Americans, which is why that generation and their equivalent American generation have such a strong feeling for each other, which alas is gone now, I think, because we simply don't have that same exposure. But it was a very interesting cultural exchange and a very creative one.
When you were a child and the war was being fought, were you confident that the Allies would win, or did you think that you'd eventually be invaded by Germany and live under German rule?
I think my parents were, like most English people, were, particularly at the beginning of the war, very anxious indeed. I think that there was real anxiety that Britain might not survive. I think this probably, unfortunately, is true of little boys everywhere. So fervently patriotic was I that I didn't accept for one moment that Britain could be defeated. I was absolutely certain that we were going to win, and so did all my friends at school. And we all felt the same way. Unfortunately, I think that little German boys probably felt the same.
Your father fought in World War I. Did you grow up hearing a lot of war stories about the First World War?
Only carefully censored ones. I think that's very common. I think fathers tell their children just as much as they think they ought to hear and no more. And my father was a gunner, artillery. I don't know whether he had a very dangerous war or not. He was gassed slightly in the spring of 1918. My father-in-law, also in the First World War, he was a fighter pilot in the Royal Naval Air Service. I think he was much luckier than my father to survive. And he would occasionally say something about his war service, but on the whole, I think grown-ups sheltered the young from what went on, and I think they still do shelter the young from what goes on. Although, of course, since the young see versions of war on television and video and cinema, there's not much point in trying to shelter them any longer.
What were the themes of the war stories your father and father-in-law would tell you?
My father really made the war out to be rather cosy. A lot of friendship and he was very fond of the horses, because, of course, in those days, guns were pulled by horses. He made it out to be rather like a big picnic, really. And I think that's a common way in which veterans talk about the war to their children. They emphasize the nice bits and leave the nasty bits out.
What about when you were an adult? Did he still talk that way?
Once or twice towards the end of his life, from my aunt, he'd said one or two things. His two brothers went to the war as well. They all came back, curiously, but my father was the youngest. And when my grandmother, his mother, took him to the railroad station to send him off to France in 1917... as a boy soldier, really. He later told me that she said to him, "I will never see you again." I've always thought this the most extraordinary thing for a mother to say to her youngest son, sending him off to the war. But it wasn't heartlessness, of course, it was terror. And she did, in fact, she didn't see any of them again, because that winter, the winter of 1917, she succumbed to a winter illness and died. And my aunt told me she believed that she had worried herself to death, that having three sons on the Western Front just reduced her to a chronic state of panic. And when she got a sort of chest infection or something that winter, she just gave up the ghost and died. I'm perfectly prepared to believe it. I think it the whole thing entirely credible. So I did, in a way, when I was older, learn something more about the family experience of the war.
Did you want to be able to experience war yourself, to fight in a war, after having grown up during World War II, having had a father who fought in World War I?
Having achieved the age of reason, I think not at all, absolutely not, and indeed, more and more as I grow older. I think the most, of course, as one grows older, one becomes less vigorous and vital and less physically self-confident than, and of course much, much less imbued with a sense of one's own immortality, which I think the young have. But as I grow older, I come increasingly to think that being in a battle is really the most horrible thing that any human being could possibly undergo.
Well, John Keegan, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Military historian John Keegan recorded in 1998. He died last week at the age of 78.